It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Oh, just like you're sitting right next to me, which could not be much further from the truth, actually. What a great connection. Adam is away and doing the remote thing, even though it doesn't necessarily sound that way. But he's having a little fun, I assume. Is that a reasonable assumption?
Oh, yeah. Definitely taking a little much-needed breather with the kids for a little summer break before we dive back into the new school year. When we get back, the summers just don't last very long, it seems like.
Yeah, that's the truth. Nothing seems to last very long anymore at the rate time is flying. So, anyway,
no doubt.
Yeah, here we are, you know, well into year 9 of this radio program. Who'd have guessed? Huh? But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it remains, in case you were interested, Adam, it remains perfect up here. It's my car said 81 on the way in, very low humidity, and just another absolutely gorgeous Northeast Florida day. I don't know how long it'll last, but I'm taking them as they come and loving every one of them.
So. Well, I'm pretty sure by August we will not be saying that it's nice and cool.
You probably are right about that. But that's okay. You know, we don't want it to turn into San Diego by having one beautiful day after another. That would be horrible. Anyway, to all the regulars out there, thanks for always being with us. You know, you're the reason we're in year 9 now and counting. No plans to go anywhere but here on Saturday mornings for a long, long time. And if you're new to the show, whether somebody told you about it, left your radio on, or whatever it might be, try to stick around for the hour. I will promise you little in life, but I will promise you this. If you don't learn something in the hour that we're on today, next week will be free. And that is a promise. How's that?
What a deal. What a deal.
I'm just a really generous guy sometime. Anywho, we've got a lot of things to talk about. And I'm going to try to talk about the things that you're not hearing about 24/7. In other words, it is not the time or the place for us to talk about Trump and the various and sundry things that are going on in the political world, except if it's going to impact your finances, because we're talking about finances here, and every single person listening is involved with their own money. No one should care about it more than you do, and no one should take better care of it. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't get help, and that's what we are here for. So if you just want to listen to what we have to say, just sit there and listen. But if you want to actually get some questions answered or bring up a topic or anything like that, then just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255 or phonetically 222-TALK. And we will put you on and we'll discuss what you would like to talk about. Meanwhile, I always like to give my little quick word for the week. And this week in the market, I could only come up with one word, that's boring. But I do have a codicil on that. It's the kind of boring I would take 52 times a year. Everything was just fine, thank you.
Okay, boring, but it's pretty exciting because we're officially in a new bull market.
Yep, we made it on Thursday.
We did.
And confirmed it on Friday.
Yeah. We notched another weekly gain, and it's we mentioned last week that just a small increase in the S&P could do it. And we officially are up more than 20% from the October lows. That meets the official definition of a bull market. So we're no longer in the bear market. So that's pretty exciting. I think there would be a lot of people out there who, if they don't pay close attention to the stock market, would be surprised by that news, because overall the economy still doesn't feel great. In fact, there's a lot of negative sentiment out there, but that's a pretty big gain since October. I guess I'm a little surprised myself. Small caps even confirmed this. They led the market higher recently, the last couple of weeks, and they've been underperforming for much of the rally. So that's a great sign, sort of even further confirming the bull market. It's just been it's been such an interesting 18 months now, and I'm surprised. I think I'm as surprised as everybody else that we are where we are today. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that, and I would point out that COVID is not over yet in the market. The market is almost over COVID, but it's not completely over it. The things, I got some stats that I'll give you on this too. The things that are going on now are just trying to find the regular old footing, because some things were so squashed and taken out of whack because of what happened with COVID and the economy and so on. Now we're getting back towards some kind of a normal, but that normal is, I hate the term new normal, but there is a new normal going on out there, and it has to do with how and where and how much people work and that kind of thing. But as to the market itself, I think we are settling into patterns that would be more recognizable in the past. So whenever I see a comparison, I don't want to see many comparisons between today and 2000, 2001, and even the first quarter of 2002, because that was all righting the ship. And now we're actually subject to real economics and real business and that kind of thing. And that's all I mean by that.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's not the same as this is not 2009. This is not after the tech crash or tech bubble. This is totally different. We've never seen anything like this, and that is the truth. This is it's different this time. It just is a totally different scenario than what we've ever faced before. We've never shut down our own economy for a month or more at a time, and then had to face the repercussions of that. This was so unprecedented. So everything that's happened over the last 18 months has been a brand new scenario, a brand new situation, and there is no playbook on how to deal with this or what will happen next.
Nope.
So it's a pretty impressive place that the market is in, if not the economy. The economy still has a bunch of holes in it, but the market is looking much better than it did even a few months ago. The S&P is actually just shy of its 52-week high that it set last August, and that is not something that we have said in a long time. The
yes,
S&P has been nowhere near a 52-week high for many, many, many months.
The Dow has been even weirder, because it, having only 30 stocks, it's been 8 or 10 stocks that are basically driving everything in both of the large cap indices. And now that's starting to expand a little bit, and more companies are coming into that. And I'm very relieved. It was getting a little out of hand. How it was the tail wagging the dog, basically, for the last few months. I don't feel that way anymore. I feel like it's coming around. Anyway, we're going to have to take our first break here in a few seconds, and when we come back, we will have our trivia question of the day, and we'll carry on with a little more market wrap. So we'll pay some bills and be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And before we give out the trivia question, I have an announcement to make. Next week at this time, we will have a special guest in the office, or in the studio. You know that we've been spending a little time lately talking about elder issues, elder care, and senior fraud, that kind of thing. Well, next week, in here with us, we're going to have board-certified elder care attorney Jennifer Aiken, whose main office is in St. Augustine, but she also has a Jacksonville office. She does elder care and estate planning, that sort of thing, and as I said, recently board certified, which makes us all very happy. You want your accountant, for instance, to be certified. If you have any knowledge about such things, you'd really like to have your financial planner certified, as we are. And it's always good for someone like an attorney to be board certified also. It tells you that they know what they're doing. So for anybody out there who has questions on elder care, estate turning, estate planning, and senior fraud and so on, call us next week and we'll get you some direct answers right from the pro. And I bring that up partly because I have a quick little thing in my hand here that said the House just recently passed a bill to create a senior fraud tax force. And I like the idea. You know, more government is always hard to get over, but I really like the idea because I know it's a terrible problem. The latest numbers that the Congress has, a fellow named Gottenheimer, he says scams cost older Americans more than $36 billion a year. And that is a lot. It has more than doubled from 2020. And their estimate, and I don't know where they get this, so I'm always a little skeptical of that, is that only one in every 42 cases of elder exploitation actually gets reported. So maybe we'll learn more about that next week, too. But you know from listening to us for a long, long time that one of the things that bugs me more than almost anything in life is when people try to take advantage of older people. And that's not only because I am one. It's just for all the wrong reasons that people do this. So don't miss that next week. Now, for this week, we have a trivia question sponsored, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Adam already brought up the subject of small cap stocks in the first segment. Now the three main indices that we talk about have larger companies in them, but the Russell 2000 index is an index of small cap stocks that has been in existence now for 44 years. And right now, well, let's go back about a year. It's been underperforming. How many months, Adam? 15 months or something?
Oh, gosh.
I don't remember.
I don't have the exact data, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, a long time. But then something happened when the bell rang on June 1st, which was a Thursday ago, and it sort of reversed and then confirmed on Friday. And I mentioned on the show last week that there might be a little spark of interest coming here, and that's something that investors might want to look into. Well, that proved to be true. And by the end of the week, what have we gained now? About 10% just in June? I think that's a number. It's really hot. And it's now into what the technical people call overbought, which has to do, I'll explain it a little while later, but it's overbought now. What that means to an investor is it'll probably pull back a little bit, but then it'll probably charge forward again. That's just a scientific not guess. But my question.
I just pulled the chart, uh-huh. And the last time that the Russell 2000 and the S&P 500 converged was around March 8th of 2021.
Oh, been a while.
Yeah.
All right. Well, how many times in the 44 years of existence has the Russell 2000 index been this overbought? And that's a number between one in a million, I guess, because it could happen twice in a year. So it's not just how many years. How many times has it been this overbought? And that is the question. Now, let's get back to the market. There were some other things, Adam, I assume you'd like to hit, because there were some interesting things going on out there.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about next week. Next week we have a Fed meeting, so yay. Uh-huh. That's going to be interesting. There's widely expected that the Fed is going to pause rate hikes. So I don't know how the market will digest that, but that is the expectation. I think it's safe to say that we're going to see some volatility next week. Typically, when you see the market hit a new bull market, you see a little bit of a pullback in the following week and month, and then it kind of takes off from there. So this coinciding with a Fed meeting, it really wouldn't surprise me to see a bit of a dip next week and perhaps some volatility. So just buckle up and be ready for that. You just can't avoid it these days. Every time Powell opens his mouth, you know what happens. So
you're exactly
keep an eye on that.
All right, we have a caller, so let's interrupt this very intelligent conversation with hopefully a more intelligent conversation. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, it's Jerome Powell.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, are you ready for the spotlight next week?
We're gonna raise interest rates a full percentage, a full point.
Should have done that a few months ago.
Hey guys, enjoy the program.
Thanks.
I haven't called in a couple months because I've just been busy. But hey, quick question: I'm going to reach the RMD age next year.
Okay.
At 72. What do you think of a strategy of opening a Roth? I don't need that money. Opening a Roth and then putting that into the Roth to let it accumulate. Can I do that? Or no?
Let's go back to your premise. If you're not there yet, you're going to reach your RMD age when you're 73.
No, 73. Okay. Got it. Okay.
So you got a little think time.
Yeah, okay.
I missed that. I wanted to make that cut, and I missed it by 6 months, but you made it. All right. Okay. Are you working?
Farming, yep.
Okay, so not much reportable taxable income?
We're making some money, a little bit.
Okay, but your tax bracket isn't like 36% or anything like that, is
no,
it?
No, it's not. No.
And will you continue to farm after reaching RMD age?
Yes.
So you technically do not need your RMD to live off of, if I'm reading it correctly.
Absolutely, right.
All right, then it comes down to a numbers game. Mm-hmm. And the number is very simple. Is it going to be worthwhile paying that much tax now to defer your RMD to a later time or to get rid of it altogether? And mm-hmm. you can lower the value of your traditional IRA or whatever it is two ways. Mm-hmm. You can either convert it or you can take it out, even if you don't have to, with regular
taxes.
Yeah,
it's a 401k.
Okay. So, well, you can do that. You can roll it out and turn it into an IRA if you want to, or you can roll it out and then convert it to a Roth. In a mm-hmm. rare plan, you could convert it to a Roth inside, but I don't know of any of those. So let's say the process is you roll out however much you want to convert into a mm-hmm. traditional IRA, and you mm-hmm. pay taxes on that amount from whatever source you want to pay the taxes from, and then mm-hmm. you convert some to a Roth. Now, what that'll do is that when your age 73 trigger gets triggered, you will have less money in that account and your RMD will be smaller. But you will mm-hmm. have paid pretty seriously for that privilege. You have mm-hmm. to figure out personally if it's worth it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we look at that is, where are the tax bracket breaks and how can you get yourself there but not exceed the one that you would be more comfortable with?
Right. Okay, so if we don't need the money and we just go ahead and do the RMD, can we set up a Roth and put that distribution into the Roth and let it accumulate tax-free?
It has to be converted. It can't be deposited.
Well, that's not necessarily true. Okay. Hold on. You have earned income, so as long as you meet all the other criteria, you whatever amount you earn, you are allowed to then make a contribution to a Roth. As long as you meet as long as your income isn't too high and you meet the other criteria, you would be able to do that up to the contribution limits, which I believe for you would be $7,500.
Right, and can we assume you're married?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so then you can both do it.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's $15,000 each year for that. That can just be deposited, and if you want to take that money out of the other one, then you'll pay tax on it and then deposit it in the Roth.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean to start you guys off with such a confusing question, but.
It's not that it's confusing. No. There's just so many steps. It's like a decision tree you have to make to get to a point where you decide. It's very personal. You got to decide you personally. Are you willing to pay this tax rate now, or you want to take a bet on the tax rates when your age is up?
And mm-hmm. Okay.
And
we're going to make an appointment. Come see you guys.
Well, that was my next suggestion.
We'll make an appointment. Come see you. Okay.
All right. Did you want to take a quick shot at the trivia? I got 30 seconds.
I didn't get the question. I was calling.
How many times has the Russell 2000 Small Cap Index been more overbought than it is today?
17 times.
Too high, but we appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back, and you now have a bracket, people, between zero and there. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I want to point out that I misspoke a moment ago. The small cap index is up actually 6% this year. The 10% was that most unexplainable index of all, the Brazilian stock market, which has been sucking wind for gosh knows how long. And all of a sudden in June, boom, it's up 10%. We're going back to the phones for good morning, Al.
Yes. Good morning. I got a question about the High Efficiency Electric Home Rebate Act. Has anybody got any rules on that as to how you get your credit and when it goes into effect and so forth and where you might could find some of the rules?
What is it again, the High Efficiency what?
It's the High Efficiency Electronic Home Rebate Act. It was part of the one they put through for heating and air conditioning, hot water heaters, electric stoves, and all that stuff back a while back. It's the HEERHRA Act.
Well, it's not something I'm familiar with.
You're not familiar with it? Okay.
Yep. Adam,
I thought maybe you might be.
Adam may be.
I am.
Yeah, Adam's been doing some remodeling and probably has run into this thing.
In other words, if you put in a new air conditioning, a heat pump, what's the qualifications that you have to meet in order to get a credit on your taxes?
Yep, that's a great question. I don't have the specifics down to that level of detail, but I do know that if you go to energy.gov, there is more specific information about it. It was part of the Inflation Reduction Act that was signed into law last year. And it's actually pretty substantial. There's $8.8 billion in rebates that are available. So not a small number. But yeah, there are very specific criteria that you have to meet in order to do it. I do know that several people I know have got new air conditioners that are, I believe it's based on the SEER level. If you improve that, and make your home more efficient, you do qualify for a tax rebate. So I would go to energy.gov and just see what you can find out there. But it is a pretty far-reaching and wide program with a lot of money available. So by all means, take advantage of it.
Okay. All right. I saw there's $8,000, I think, is the maximum on the HVAC, and $840 on an electric stove, and then something about a heat pump, electric dryer. I never heard of one of those, and also a heat pump, hot water heater. So it's a lot of weird stuff. But anyway, I'll check it out. Energy.gov.
Yeah, yep. And if you score something major out of that, call us again and let the people know.
There are a lot of us
who are not familiar with it, but they're changing a lot of rules on appliances, and there's a lot of us who think, man, if you're going to need one in the next 2-3 years, maybe it's a good time to buy it while you can still get something that you know how to operate.
Exactly, right.
I love it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, great question. Thank you. That was a good thing to bring up just because there are probably a lot of people who are not aware of that program. The other one that I've seen a lot recently is electric cars. You can get up to a $15,000 tax rebate. I believe it's 15. There's different levels based on your income, but if you switch over to an electric car, so if that's something that interests you, now is a great time to be looking at it. And you have to be very cautious when you go shopping, because only certain models qualify. That list is available on I could look it up, but it's online, and you can find out which models qualify. But that's a pretty substantial bonus if you're interested in electric cars.
And there are also quantitative limits on the number of whatever model that can be sold and be eligible. So if they sell out too fast, you might think you're getting one, only to find out you're not in line quick enough. So always be very cautious when you're dealing with government. But we all know that, right?
All right.
There are a couple of things that you were going to finish up, I think, and I got out what I needed.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that since the October lows, there's been several asset classes that have done fairly well. One of those is international stocks. You brought up Brazil.
Right.
But since last October, Italy, Spain, Germany, France, and Mexico have all added over 40% to their stock market. So it's
wow.
Not like this has just been a U.S.-based rally. It's been pretty worldwide. The all-world except U.S. ETF is up 9% this year and 26% since last October. Now, one area that hasn't done very well has been commodities. They've gone a different direction this year. It's down. The index is down 7.5% and 9.4% since October. I'm pretty sure that you can attribute a lot of that loss to natural gas, which is down 54% this year. And 71% since October. Kind of a shocking number, 71%.
Well, the shocking thing to me was how high it got. So I'm not surprised so much by how it's falling.
Yeah, that is a good point. The news with Ukraine last year and Russia really set off a buying frenzy in natural gas, which was, it turned out to be, Europe had a really mild winter and didn't use a lot of natural gas, so it didn't end up being an issue. But it could be again this year. We'll see what happens. Gold and silver have both done quite well since the market lows. They're up 27 and 17% respectively. So it's not like commodities are all falling in together. There's been a lot of divergence between the different commodities. Fixed income is an area that hasn't seen those rebounds in prices. However, that could be a good thing, because if you think about what you're buying today when you buy a bond, you are not only getting an approximately 5% yield, but you're buying it at a discount relative to where it was 18 months ago. And if the Fed gets in a situation where they're cutting rates, you're going to see the price appreciation. So to me, bonds look very attractive right now, despite not having seen any rebound off their, well, very slight rebounds off their lows. So something to take a look at. One other thing I want to talk about, inflation, actually good news. The New York Fed has a global supply chain pressure index, and that tracks how hard it is to get raw materials for manufacturing. As you can imagine, in 2022, it spiked to levels that we have never seen before. However, this week it dropped to a record low. So on the other side, it's another level we haven't seen any ever before, but it's on the low side, which is surprising. But that kind of confirms what we're seeing in the Logistics Managers Index, which showed the first contractionary reading in the 6.5-year history of the report that just happened. And in fact, transportation prices are at record lows and inventory and warehousing are almost at record lows. So that is really, all of that is really good news for inflation going forward.
And if you want a confirming data point, I guess, look what's happening in China. Their recent inflation number was 0.1%. Their exports are falling very, very quickly, and prices in general are not holding up for them. And that means that they're not exporting deflation anymore, but hopefully they'll be doing some less exporting in general, too, as we continue, hopefully, to bring things back here. One other thing I noticed, the blip in the market this week, Saudi Arabia announced they're going to cut back another 1 million barrels a day in production, and we got an immediate 4% spike in oil prices, only to end up, after the close on Friday, lower than they were before that announcement. So apparently the supply of things is not really a big issue right now. That means it's going to put pressure on, at least. I'm not going to make an absolute prediction about the Fed taking a pause, but it certainly gives them the incentive to think twice and probably do the pause. And quite frankly, they've been open about it this week. So I'm looking for hopefully a little free ride, have enough increases in interest rates lately to last us for quite a while. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think we're good in that regard. I don't think I don't think they have to do anything else to fight inflation. If you look at the charts, everything is coming down. It takes a while, yes, but you have to let the previous increases filter through, and they really haven't done that yet. So let's give it at least a pause and see if that trend continues without any more interest rate hikes.
I absolutely agree, and I think the preponderance, I think the market's factoring in about an 80% chance. Is that the last thing you read? That there will be no increase this time?
Last time I looked, yeah, it was like 75 or 77%.
Okay. I'm kind of in agreement. But, you know, it's Powell, and even though we just talked to him a few minutes ago, he wouldn't commit.
Yeah.
All right, we got a little bit of time left in this segment, so I'm going to say a few things about, well, don't you just love a big yellow school bus? I mean, doesn't everybody just get really excited at the sight of a big yellow school bus? Gee, who do I sound like? Could be some elected official in D.C. whose name is not needed to be mentioned hardly ever. Well, this is kind of a touchy subject for a lot of people, but the government is putting a lot of money into electric school buses, and the results are less than stellar, to say the least. They spent $1 billion in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and they're nothing but problems. They can't keep them running. The $50,000 charging stations that they budgeted for came in at $200,000. But maybe the worst one is in the thriving metropolis of Wrangell, Alaska, where the Biden administration awarded them a big yellow electric school bus for their three schools. And the company that they contract with was required to take one of their working buses and put it out of service in order to collect the money on the new one. Well, they didn't like that idea. So the school district itself decided they're going to apply to the EPA, and they're going to tell them that they're willing to buy a working school bus and destroy it, so that the bus company can add an electric school bus to the line. They got that permission. And it reminded me a while back, 2009, remember Cash for Clunkers, where they took cars, perfectly good working cars, off the road and had to destroy them so they could never go back into service again. And that's what happened on this one. So they paid $10,000 to buy a bus and destroy it so they can get an electric bus. And wouldn't you know, they just don't work that well. So they kind of have to keep extras on hand so they can use the diesel when the going gets tough. And it just makes you want to stand up and yell and scream, stop helping. Don't help us anymore. If we want a big yellow electric school bus, we'll go get one and we'll pay for it. Stay out of it. Maybe it's just me. But I hate to see money thrown away. And from what I can tell now, this money is thrown away. And by the way, there's a company called Proterra that's into this stuff in Michigan. And some of you know the name Jennifer Granholm, Secretary of Energy. She sold a few shares of that recently for a $1.6 million profit. And that's all I'm going to say about that. All right, we're going to take one last break. We'll be back shortly. The trivia question is still open. How many times has a small cap index been as oversold as it is now? And we know that number is less than 17. Got some other topics like Roth IRAs that have come up today, so we'll see what happens. But lines are open. Give us a call. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the question is still there. How many times has the small cap Russell 2000 index been as overbought as it is right now? And it's under 17 times. That's over 44 years. Quick follow-up on the electric vehicle thing. They're in the majority of states for this summer, there's an elevated risk of power blackouts. And it's brought to you largely because of things like the electric vehicle push and so on. And I remind anybody who's interested, coal is more than five times as dependable as wind, and more than twice as dependable as solar for generating electricity. Now, my response, take a good look at maybe investing in some generator companies, because I think there's a lot of people that are going to be thinking whole house generators have a place in their life. I do, and have for a long time, and it happened that my battery went dead this week, so we had a little outage and we needed it and didn't get it. So make sure you maintain them well. All right. The one of the most explored subjects in my 22 years in the business has been the Roth IRA. And it's such a simple concept. You take your money after you've had it taxed by the government, and you put it in an IRA, and it grows, and when you take it out, you don't pay taxes on it anymore. What could be simpler than that? The interesting part, the complex part, comes in when you start to wonder, should I use a Roth IRA, or should I use a traditional or a 401k or whatever? And then it becomes very complex, because if you pay now, you have very few guarantees later what's going to happen to your money. For years, for the first decade at least, maybe more, that I've been doing this, the common thought was rates are kind of low right now and they're likely to be very much higher when I'm retired. But I pushed back against that and said, well, what are you basing that on? Because over time, every proposal, every serious tax proposal I could find would actually lower rates, because what they're trying to do is eliminate a lot of deductions. Now, that happened, actually. It was called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. So now the rates are lower, and all of a sudden, my perspective is changing, because they're set to go back to the higher ones in 2026. Back to the phones for a moment. Good morning, Dylan.
Good morning, sir.
What's happening?
I just had a question. You touched on the small cap question.
Yep.
And so I have majority of my retirement investments in the TSP. And I avoided some of the downturn by going to the G fund through short-term treasuries. But then recently I transferred some more into the S fund, which is the mid-small cap fund.
Right.
I still have a good chunk in the G fund, making very little in comparison. However, I know the popular option is the C fund, which tracks the S&P 500. But I'm looking overall between leading indicators and just where the S&P is at. It's only being held up by, like, you know, several, but 14 companies. Generally, it's a very general question here, but do you think it would be smarter for me just to dollar cost average more into the S fund than small caps?
How old are you?
Get a better return.
What's your age?
31, sir.
Oh.
31, sir.
See, everything changes when you say that. You can take a lot more risk than most people can at your age. And not only can, you should take more risk. So if you have some small cap, do you have a percentage of small cap that you have right now?
Yes. Yes. So right now I contribute 15% of my paycheck into my TSP. Uh-huh. 100% of my contribution allocations go to the small cap S fund. I have a small sliver in the S&P, and the rest of my residual holdings is in the G fund.
Okay, and so, what percentage constitutes this? What percentage does the small cap fund constitute of your entire fund?
Right now, about half. The other half is in the G fund. All the new money goes into the S fund. And
yeah,
my question has to do with, yes.
I'll tell you what Adam is thinking, but more fun than that would be Adam. Tell them what you're thinking.
Yeah. So that percentage of small caps, well, has probably served you very well over the last few weeks in particular. But that's going to be on the real high side. I mean, that's a lot of risk concentrated in 50% of your holdings. So, yeah, I think switching over some of that to the S&P, is it the C fund? I think that's a really good idea. That will help diversify you and get you a little less concentrated in small caps, which are notoriously volatile. And you would not be happy if the market took a dive right now. So I think you're thinking along the right direction, but definitely I would start moving more away from the G fund and into stocks just because of your age, regardless of what happens in the market. My dad mentioned earlier that you can afford to take more risk, and you should, and I agree with that. So I would spread it out between those two and start moving more into the S&P fund.
Understood. Thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I would at least cut that S fund in half, and if I were in your age group, I'd be half in the C fund, and I'd be another 10 or 15% in international. If you got over 30 years to wait, and if you look at history, there's almost no chance that you're not going to do very well by doing that if, A, you live long enough and contribute, and, two, yep. don't do anything stupid like selling out.
Yes.
That's the key.
Definitely.
All right. You want to take a shot at the trivia?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your guys' help. Hope you have a good rest of your day.
Okay. I don't think you heard it either. If you're still on the phone, if you'd like to take a shot of the trivia, it'll be the last chance for today.
But thanks for the call. Yep. Great call.
Okay, thank you.
How many times has it been this overbought, since you're talking about small caps anyway?
I think 17, I've heard.
Now, that was a guess that was too high. It's less than that, and I'll give you a shot at it.
If I had a guess, this overbought, probably about 4 to 5 times.
Well, I'm going to tell you something that might surprise you. You're way too high. It has never been this overbought, which tells me if I were you on Monday, I'd be taking about half of that out of there at a really nice high level.
Although historically, just being overbought or even extremely overbought in the small cap index is not necessarily a sign of a pullback either.
I'm not saying any of that because I don't like small cap, and neither is Adam. It's just because that's a really high percentage.
It is.
Okay.
All right. Well, we appreciate the call. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Thank you.
All right. That was interesting. That would come in right on the cusp there. It has been an astounding, 10 days in the market, and actually seven trading days. But remember, it was kind of like I was talking about the natural gas thing, only in reverse. Natural gas is selling for about $2.30 right now. It was over $9 at one point, which is just abjectly crazy with all the natural gas in the world. So the fact that it has tumbled 72% could hardly be considered really, really surprising. Okay, we need to go. I'm going to be on this Roth, not only just the to Roth or not to Roth, but the Roth conversion as time permits over the next several weeks. And you'll get an idea of the very complex nature of that decision. And not only that, but the very personal measure of that particular decision. So you want to be here. Now, I'll remind everybody, next week, a very interesting show. Board-certified elder care attorney Jennifer Aiken will be joining us. And if you have any elderly people or friends, or if you are one or any of that stuff, and you have questions, next week you'll get some good answers for free. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. This is the Van Wy Financial Hour.
AM 600 WBOP Jacksonville, 101.1 FM W266 CX Fruit Cove.